Watch Podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension educator. For today's Beef Watch Podcast, we're going to discuss the topic of bovine congestive heart failure and some factors that we've learned that contribute to that, and maybe some things we can learn in terms of trying to manage that going forward. To discuss this topic, I'm joined today by Dr. Brian Vanderlei, who's an epidemiologist and veterinarian at the Great Plains Veterinary Education Center. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Aaron.
Well, Dr. Vanderlei, this is a topic that's been an issue for quite a while, but I think we're starting to learn some things that can help us think about setting some direction in terms of management and decision-making. Help us just talk through with us, I guess, understand what have we learned, and then how can we use that information going forward?
Yeah. So maybe just a quick review for, I think most people have probably encountered discussions or articles about bovine congestive heart failure, but just to quickly review, there's a lot of ways that animals can develop congestive heart failure. And what we're talking about is a fairly new syndrome that we see in cattle. Typically, we see it in feedlot cattle. There's a few reports from elsewhere. But what this is not a lot of other things. So it's not exposure to high elevation and the heart failure that a lot of people think about when they see brisket cases up in the mountains. It's not heart infections with things like Histophilus, not toxicities and stuff like that. It's something else. So what we've learned to date is when we rule out all those other conditions, that there's a pretty significant genetic relationship to that problem. It's a genetic predisposition. It's not a lock. So animals that are genetically predisposed may not get congestive heart failure, but our research to date indicates that there are genetic factors that make them predisposed to get those, much like genetics in people might predispose us to things like heart disease or other things like that. So we see some of the same parallels.
So I guess talk about those factors. And as we were getting ready to have this conversation, there's some risk factors that if you have one or two of these in beef cattle, they have a higher disposition to exhibit this, but it's not as high as you might think. So just talk that through with us.
Yeah. Yep. So today, our team has discovered three genetic factors that are related to congestive heart failure in feedlot cattle. Two of those factors have been published, and that we've done a lot of work to make sure that we've validated them. They're real. They continue to, through many different iterations of our research, have shown themselves to stay related. We haven't lost the relationship. So that's just us trying to do our due diligence to make sure these are valuable to people who are dealing with this problem. So those factors are related to two genes. One of those genes is called NF1A. The other one is called ARRDC3. So they're actually changes in the code related to those two genes that we use as markers for risk for heart failure. And the cool thing about those two is that they're both two-copy or recessive inheritance patterns, which means that in order for an animal to be at risk, they need to have two copies of the bad form of the risk factor. So every animal's got two. If they have one copy that's not the risk form, they're not at risk for developing, they don't have the risk factor for developing congestive heart failure. So, and then there's a third one that's very new. In fact, we have not done some of the same validation work yet because we found it using whole genome sequence data from cases in the feed yard that we've looked at in the past. And it's unique in that it's a protective factor. So there's a fairly, it's not super rare, but it's an uncommon form of a gene variant called Jumanji. And this is available on the US Mark website, the information is, but if animals have this fairly uncommon form of it, they're protected from congestive heart failure. So we're pretty excited about that one. The information and the tests are in development right now for that one, but I'll talk a little bit more about these in some detail. So we've spent most of our time on NF1A and ARRDC3. Those two factors in combination in our initial research increased the risk of an animal developing heart failure by 28 times over animals that had neither one. And if they had either of them, either the NF1A or the ARDC3 risk factor, they had about an eight-fold increase or eight times higher increase in the risk of heart failure compared to animals that didn't have either one. So those are pretty big numbers. But what we found as we have gone through this process, there's a couple of other numbers that are really important, and they're called negative and positive predictive value. So I'll explain those just a little bit. Positive predictive value is the number of animals that, if they have the risk, actually develop the heart failure condition. So think about that as if we were testing them for risk, how many times the risk actually turn into congestive heart failure. And that number is pretty low. So if we test 100 animals that are positive for both the ARDC3 and NF1A risk factors, right now, only about 8% of those will actually go on to develop congestive heart failure, which tells us that there's other things that are contributing, and we don't yet know exactly what those other things are. We suspect that there's environment and management factors. We don't have those figured out yet. On the other hand, the negative predictive value, which is the number of animals that don't develop heart failure if they don't have either one of the two risk factors, is really high. It's like 99%+. So what that means is that less than 1% of the animals that have neither risk factor actually develop heart failure. So to summarize, what that means really, really simply is that we don't have any really good options for people that are feeding cattle to be able to predict the heart failure condition in the cattle that they're taking into their feedlot. And then we don't have any tools for them at this point. We're working on that stuff. What we do have is an excellent breeding tool for people who want to reduce the risk of congestive heart failure in cattle that will go to the feed yard. Because of the really, really high negative predictive value, if we breed the risk out of cattle, we have good evidence that says that those calves will be at much lower risk when they go to the feed yard during their feeding period for developing heart failure.
Dr. Vandelei, what percentage of the population has this protective factor in terms of not developing it?
Yeah, the Jumanji factor, the frequency of the protective factor is less than 15% in our study population. So there's not a lot of cattle. And that would be 15% of all the copies. So every animal has two, but they only need one copy of the beneficial form of this factor in order to be protective.
But if we had a herd that we knew that this was a issue in, or we had genetics that had this, we would need to use a homozygous sire with the protective factor to basically clean up the risk factor. Is that correct?
Yep, to guarantee that the calves have at least one copy without having any knowledge about the cow. That's how you would have to do that. And I'll say that just this is, I don't have any solid numbers on this, but we've been testing some cattle for this Jumanji protective factor. And I think out of all the cattle we've looked at, which is a few hundred at this point, I think we've only found one animal that has homozygous for the beneficial form. So it's relatively uncommon to find a homozygous. We see quite a few animals that have at least one copy. And I think for people that are interested in developing a breeding program to minimize heart failure risk, my encouragement to them is that we can't solve this problem in one generation. We can remove a lot of risk in one generation for the calves, but it's like a lot of other recessive or two-copy types of inheritance models, where you can remove the risk of the disease in a generation for one of them if you can find homozygous bulls, or homozygous, one of the parents is homozygous. The problem is that there's two that we are very confident in, and one that we're developing more data to support, or we'll validate it, right? And we may find out that we can't support it. But we're working on these three factors, which means that in a breeding program, there's not just one recessive problem to deal with. There's actually two, and then this protective factor, which is a little bit of a different thing again. So I encourage people to view this as a project that's going to take a while. It's going to take time to reduce risk. And especially when you account for all the other things that are important to producers, heart failure risk is important, but it's not the only thing that's important. It's going to take time. And that's what we're seeing in some of the herds that we work with that are working on breeding away from congestive heart failure risk, is that they're reducing the number of risk alleles in their herds over time. And we're still in the process of measuring how much heart failure that removes from their system.
Well, as we talk about many times with disease type issues, they're complicated. There's a lot of factors. And so we can't just pull one lever and necessarily expect to get a response. So,
right. Yeah. And I would say the other thing that I'll add is that we're very willing to help. We have a good team of people that are working on this, including Dr. Mike Heaton is my collaborator at the USDA. He works on the genetic side of it. And if people are interested in developing a breeding plan for their system, we are happy to help build that because we know it's the early days. There's a lot to learn. There's a lot to work through. The testing options are relatively limited. Right now, there are three companies that I'm aware of that provide some form of testing for these risk factors without any endorsement of any of the companies. I'll just name those for people's benefit. There's a company called Bullseye Genetics that provides testing for these three, the ARDC3, NF1A, and the Jumanji. There's another company called Quantum Genetics that also provides the same three-factor test. And then Neogen or GeneSeq provides a slightly different form of the test. We have worked with the first two companies, Bullseye Genetics and Quantum Genetics, to validate their assay. So we're confident in the accuracy of the test. We have not done the same thing with the GeneSeq company. That doesn't mean it's not working. We just haven't formally investigated that. So, but those are the three options that are currently available. And there is some challenges with figuring out a breeding plan. There's lots of different speeds. You know, if you test everything, cows and bulls, you can go faster. There are limitations to testing. If an operation doesn't feed out their animals and they sell them, they may not be able to realize the benefit of some testing right now. So lots of things that are still in development. But all that to say, if people are interested in exploring this, please reach out to me and we will try to support your effort in whatever way we can.
Dr. Mandelai, anything else on this topic you'd like to highlight today? I know this has been a long process, a project you've worked on for been 10 plus years now.
This project has been in the works for 10 years. I've been working on it for 7 now. And when I first started this, I had the beginner's impression that this looked like a fairly straightforward problem to solve. And I have been corrected. So there's a lot of challenges. There's a lot of things about how the beef industry works, how breeding stock get developed and how they move through our system. And there's really good reasons at this point to test for some people. And I think there's reasons why people have good reasons to be cautious. And that, again, that's what we're happy to help support people as they try to explore how this technology and this information might be valuable in their system.
Well, I appreciate you joining me today. Anything else you'd like to highlight on this topic?
We could go on for quite a while, but I think I've hit the highlights.
Well, thanks again for your time. Thanks for your work on this. I know it is a major issue for some yards and the type of cattle that they feed. And so it's obviously, as we look at the value of fed cattle today, a steer or heifer that tips over at the end of the feeding period is an expensive loss. And so,
yeah, very, very helpful.
Yeah, trying to figure out how can we address this long term. Again, does it seem like a quick solution, but the process to get there is going to have value.
Thank you for highlighting this research. We always appreciate getting the word out. And my contact information is listed on the University of Nebraska website in a couple places. Please look me up and get a hold of me.
Yeah, if you want more information on the topic we discussed today or would like to visit with Dr. Mandelai directly, again, he's at the Great Plains Veterinary Education Center, and you can find his contact information there.